And welcome back, everybody, to another episode of Benched with Bubba, episode 692, part two of our main event season recap with Ben Tibb. We talked the draft. Now we're talking in-season process, from what he uses week to week, to how he sets his lineups, to doing fab, so on and so forth. And we'll go through the fab throughout the season to see how that all went, the pros, the cons, because we've all had the fun, the goods, the bads, the uglies of the fab world. But what's the process that gets there? If the process was sound, results happen. That's kind of part of the deal. So that's something you got to keep working on. Before we get to that, you can find me on Twitter at BDentric and my co-host on the show, as usual, as we were talking about his main event, on Twitter at BreakingBen_T. Ben Tidd, how are we doing, my friend?
Doing very well, Bubba. Thanks for having me back on again. Last week turned into a two-parter, which I'm probably fine with. I think it's better to go through it slowly and not rush through anything. So hopefully the fab side of and in-season management is just as interesting to listeners as the draft side is. Because I know some people prefer the drafting side of things. It's a little more fun, but as we'll go through this, it's just as important to manage your team properly.
Yeah, and that's the thing, is like the draft's the most exciting part, quote unquote. It's what everyone looks forward to. You know, people are drafting right now on October 8th. Like, the NFBC room is actually open. There are live drafts taking place on the NFBC. It's not just the meatball draft anymore. It's not just Crazy Mike's draft. There's actually drafts taking place on the NFBC right now. So there are people going for 2025 as we record this show. But it's also good to look back. Like, I tweeted something about it, and it's something Ryan and I talk about. I've talked about many other guests on the past on this bench with Bubba that are really great fantasy players, and I get them on, and it's all about recapping things. What went right? What went wrong? You got to learn from your mistakes. It's one of the biggest things you can do. And they're not always mistakes. Like I said, we're going to talk about some fab stuff. Ben and I have joked off the air. Heck, Ben has joked on the show about one of the big ones we're going to talk about. He tweeted about it today. I told him immediately, I remember one of my drops of dropping Matt Carpenter a few years ago because he was literally dog poop, was like ready to get sent to the minors, gone, similar to your situation. And then he goes on and has like an MVP caliber season. So process is one thing, results are another, and you can't control results. So you got to just make sure if you're doing what's right enough, knock on wood, it'll pan out in the end. So for those of you that listen to part one, and if you haven't stopped this, go listen to part one, because we went over Ben's draft, all 30 picks of the main event team, and we kind of went over why he did it, drafting for the overall, all those kind of really, really intricate things that are very, very interesting to the process, to make sure he has innings, strikeouts, the hitting side of it, all of it. So go check that out. We're going to pick up right where we left off now. Draft is done. It's time to get ready for in-season work, Ben. We're going to start with this. What kind of tools, what kind of stuff do you use to prep you for the season now? Because we talked about draft, you use projections, you make your little sheet and all that kind of stuff. Now when you shift over to in-season, what are you using for this?
Yeah, so I go back to Excel again, but it's a much more simpler Excel file that I use. It's basically just like a giant notepad that I use each week, and I'll refresh it once Sunday's over and the new week starts. But there's like a handful of different components to it. So it's all one sheet, though. So on like the left-hand side, I have the two-star pitchers for the upcoming week. And then I also have, right next to that, I have the teams that have four games Monday through Thursday. I look at which teams have three versus a righty, three versus a lefty, because platooning is so prominent now, and which is annoying, but you have to deal with it. So in case like you have, say, in a shallow league, Trevor Larnach available, and the Twins get three righties, I'll write the Twins down, look for hitters like Larnach, Walner before he was widely added, people like that. And then I have a list of all the teams. I look at, okay, are there any prospective closers? Have there already been any changes for each of the teams? So if I need saves for any of my teams, I do this for all my fab leagues. I don't just do it for the main event. So if I have a fab league, I look at it the same way. I look at the prospective new closers or any specs that I may want to add. And then I have a few cells where I put down my, so we'll get into this eventually, I'm sure, but how much money I have on average per week to spend for each team. So I have an idea. Okay, I don't want to go too crazy. Maybe if it's in September, I have to really stick to $1 bids, potentially, things like that. And then I have a list of teams that are ideal for streaming for pitchers. So I have a handful of those that I look at just to remind me each week. And then I also, and so that's like, that's a lot right there. And I still have more to go. So, yeah. So I cover all those bases. And then I start looking at my actual teams. So then I usually start this actual like ingrained process probably Friday. Like as I listen through podcasts throughout the week, or if I look at things on Twitter, I'll make a note in my phone of players that either got called up, came back from injury, or are doing well, just so I don't forget about them. So I kind of do it throughout the week, but my real work kind of starts Friday. And that, and I mentioned the two starters. I listened to the RotoWire pod with Clay Link and Todd Zola. They go over the two star starters. So I listen to that, and they give their opinion on who's pitching. And I listen along to that, write it all down. And of course it changes. Like, you know, you and Ryan do the same thing on Thursday, and then come Fab on Sunday, half the two star starters aren't doing that anymore. So, but I mean, look, I subscribed to RotoWire this year. So I look at the grid myself, and it was the best $60 I've spent, probably, because it's having that the way it's, and like, we'll get into the other thing eventually too, but you can export it into Excel, and you can do whatever you want with it. It's really good. All right. Yeah, any questions, or just want
to, I want to stop you there for a second, because first off, I'm glad you said the RotoWire thing. Like, we've promoted that forever. Like, it's literally, I've been on RotoWire shows, and I tell them this every episode. They probably get annoyed by now, or they forget because they have a million guests, one of the two. But I've been a member of RotoWire. That was the first subscription I ever had back in college. So around like 2003, maybe four, something like that. I started college in fall of 2002. So somewhere in that time, my first subscription, when you have like no money, you're eating Top Ramen. I paid for RotoWire because I wanted it for stuff, and I've used it ever since then. And I think it's one of the best tools I have during the season. I legit have that schedule grid tab up at all times on my fantasy stuff, between using for shows, for content, for my own teams. I'm always on that thing, updating it, refreshing it. So 100% with you on that. Clay Link, a long time ago, went like behind the scenes on when he first started out, he used to run that. And there's like a group of people that run it now, because it's basically, they just follow the beat writers. And the second they update something, boom, they go straight to that sheet, essentially. And this year might have been the toughest one ever, because usually they bold it when the players are there. Not a lot of bolding this year. It was very challenging, especially as the season went on. So, yes, RotoWire, glad you shouted that out. One thing I wanted to say is what was really interesting to me, because I think a lot of people just in life in general, but when it comes to baseball also, look at their team first and see what they need to fix. Where Ben literally looked at every possible thing before looking at his team. Ben was looking at two-star pitchers. He was looking at the relief pitching situations, which is like, some teams might not, some players might not even look at that if their team, quote unquote, doesn't need a closer. Even though looking at that might go, huh, I could speculate for a buck right now, and now I got 3.5 guys or so, like something like that. There's a whole process there in your brain. So that's something that's interesting, because like, I guarantee you some listeners on the show don't even look at that if they don't need one, not even an option. So you think of the relievers, you did the two steps, you're looking at, you know, the schedules, you're looking at the lefty righties, all that kind of stuff. These are a lot of things that either I just, because I do too much content that I see throughout the week, or I always look at kind of right before I start my fab, because I wrote my last thing I do before I do my fab is write my fab article. So I kind of like freshen the brain. But yeah, the fact you go through all of that around Friday or on Friday, give or take, now puts you into like a, let's just say 48-hour window, just for fun, maybe Mas or Menos, more or less on that. So you've done that. You listen to your shows. You've done your two-step. Now where does your brain go as you start analyzing your teams on how to approach getting ready for Fab? And like you said, we'll talk about your Fab process here in a minute. But just leading up to this, everything you use to run your team in season and Fab, what's next in this step?
Yep. So the one thing I will – so I also look at the grid. And I mentioned the streaming target, the teams. Then I'll go line by line for those teams and see who is projected to start against them. And then – in my mind, because I'm so in tune with like the 15 teamers, because that's what I play mostly when I do what I do this process for, is I can just look at, see who's starting and have an idea. Okay, will I be able to add this pitcher or not? And then I don't even, like, I'll still check, because you know, you may have that one league where someone got dropped. Like, there's always 90% roster people on free agency. Sometimes you never know, but I'm pretty good. So that goes pretty by pretty quickly. And at that point, I'm ready to look at my teams. So I do that like Friday and Saturday. And then so on Saturday is like when I really start looking at my teams, and I go to my lineup for next week. If listeners are familiar with the NFBC format, you can change which week you're looking at. So you see the schedule, and I go through the hitters first. I have like my studs. Okay, they're probably always going to start. And then I have I mentioned I have my team listed on the sheet. All this year was all four teams. And then in the column on the right, I have needs. And then I have in parentheses, starter highlighted in red and bench highlighted in green. And then, so if I need a first baseman, because my first baseman is kind of weak and that maybe he has a two game week, I'll write first base and I'll make it red. So I know that I need a starting first baseman. And then if it's then if I'm ready at that point, I'll put down, okay, who do I want to drop? Whether it's the guy who I have in this week, or if I'm like rotating guys in and out, but maybe it's a fringe starter that I don't want to drop, but I don't want to start. So I'll look for someone on my bench to drop. And then I go through my lineup for each team. Okay. I'll say, maybe I need two starters. Maybe I need a reliever, but I need a bench reliever. So that's green. Maybe I need a utility batter. Doesn't even matter. Maybe my util spot is available, so I can just add anybody for that spot. And then, so I color code it. And then I have a list of my drops for each position. So if I have five needs, I have five drops. And then I do that for my four teams, for example. That's what I use this year. And then after that, I go through my league standings and I look at stats that are either close or I'm really low in. And then as the season goes on, like if I get to a point where I'm really low in steals, I don't even bother trying to add steals. I had my one main event, I essentially punted steals midway through the season. So I was low in steals, but I didn't even consider trying to address it. But especially with that main event, this main event that we're talking about today and last week, I was looking a lot at not just, okay, where am I low, but where am I close? Because I've heard people mention it more on pods about, okay, people always look at where can they gain, but like I went from first to third, so I lost. So I was trying not to lose points. And it's just as important when you get late in the season of where you can lose points besides gaining.
And one thing I noticed, especially late, and I've screwed it up twice, not as bad this year, thank God I hung on. But I remembered it from the year before. I told myself not to be so crazy. And I thought I was more disciplined, but Albert Suarez sucks. But I was losing points and ratios. Like you said, I was focused on where can I gain this and that and the other. And then boom, I'm like, I didn't, I got the strikeouts, I got this. But then, he gives up six runs and the whip. And then you look and there goes the ratio categories the opposite direction while you're trying to go So what you're saying resonates is what I'm just trying to say. Resonates a lot. A couple questions before we dig back into what you're talking about there. So kind of try to remember where we left off if I forget. But so you said you have, I'm gonna start this. You said you have four teams. I know this has been a big talking point for people because I'm a degenerate, so I have a million teams. I'm trying to limit fab teams, but again, I have issues. So we go with that. Like Toby, I remember he's been cutting back year after year after year for this reason. You have four fab teams. How many more do you think you could handle with this approach?
So I think I could do one or two more to be as attentive to each one as possible. I guess that'll be a decision I have to make this upcoming baseball season. But yeah, I don't know. Like four, I've limited myself to four fab leagues at most my 4 years playing NFBC. And so I do have a pretty efficient process now. It's just like, I go pretty deep into the player pool when I make my fab list because I don't want to get shut out on trying to add somebody. And you don't get anyone that you added or you wanted to add, it's all happened to all of us. And sometimes it's overkill, but I don't know. Maybe I could do one or two more. So like this format was canceled this past year and they tried in the past to add it, but it's called the solo shot where it's a overall contest, but you're only limited to one team, which I found appealing, especially when I first started playing the NFBC. But also it was also different because it was like a mix of a DC and a fab league where you only did DC, you only did fab once a month. So if I did that, it's not really an extra fab league because it's also a different night of the week.
It's on Thursday
so
night or something, right?
Yeah, it's like midweek, yeah. So I could easily handle that. So that doesn't really count. So I could do that in my four teams and probably still be fine. So, I mean, if it really came to it, I wouldn't want to add one or two more. I know people say nine. I'm like, that's just too many for me. I'd rather just focus my attention. And plus, you still have to set your DC lineups and stuff. So luckily I work from home a lot and I'm pretty flexible. So like if I was in the office, it would be a lot different. It'd be a much different story, But
when I'm busy, I pull out my iPad and my truck and that is fun setting lineups. It's better than your phone. Not quite like a computer though. Like it's
iPad would be a nice medium.
Yeah, it still works, but it's one of those like, oh crap. But because if I'm at home, I got that Google Chrome extension that shows you who's in and out of the lineup. That is tremendous to help set your lineup on a Monday or a Friday. So you kind of maybe one or two teams, that's fair. You're primarily a 15 teamer. Do you see yourself playing 12s or do you just want to stick in the 15s? Because like I told you before, my mindset is so stuck in the 12 world, like my my player pool depth is 15 worthy, but my, I think my in-season management is 12 team, where it's, so it's tricky for me to flip back and forth, if that makes sense.
Yeah, no, it makes sense. And I know others have expressed that challenge of managing the two before. I'll do my best to stay in the 15 team lane now that I've gotten there. It's
so no Champions League for you.
Yeah, I mean, it's definitely one of the hurdles that I'd have to overcome, I think. And but I mean, it's not, I wouldn't write it off, but I mean, I have no plans really of trying to mix the two. I mean, the Yahoo format is so much, it's so different though, because it's daily and it's much more aligned. It's a completely different game compared to NWC, but I feel like there's enough similarities between OCs and like the main event where, but there's enough different as well, because the fab dollars would be a lot different. The draft strategy is different, especially when you're drafting the 12 versus 15. So for now, my plan is to stay in 15s only, I would say.
Gotcha. A couple more questions here. Throughout this whole process, we actually obviously haven't finished your whole process to this, but just for fun, as it's why it's on my top of my head, how much time do you allocate or spend on each team on average per week?
Ooh. So I limited like an hour on Friday. Maybe an hour.
An hour per team.
Yeah. Well, Sunday can always vary, because like, you know, on Sunday you always go back and forth between checking your bids and stuff. So I would say at least an hour per team across the weekend.
I just wanted to emphasize that, because it's not crazy when it comes to main event players. And I just want to make sure the listeners are hearing this. Like, don't be scared by it. You can still play in the main event. You can still win if you don't have that much time. That's totally doable. Not a question. But if you go look at the leaderboards year in and year out, I guarantee you at least 75% of those people are spending a lot of time on what they do. They're very smart players. They have spreadsheets. They do a lot of, but they also listen to all the podcasts. Most of them do. And they subscribe to RotoWire, Razzball. They use all the tools too. So you can do these things as well. I'm just saying, when we talk this talk, Ben's not like this like unicorn that's just spending all this time. I'm trying to say, this is what happens. That's the point of this show, is to show you behind the curtains of what we're doing here. All right.
I'll say honestly, the worst part, or the most time extensive part, is going through the free agents list and looking for players to add. Like that, that's literally the worst part, probably, of the process.
Especially in a 15. In a 15, it's just like
you're looking for trash, essentially, a lot.
What can you polish for the week before you drop it again? So you mentioned something about when you're looking at your teams, you're looking like, okay, I need these three needs for the week. How? First off, I have two parts to this. You mentioned like sometimes there's an obvious drop, but then other times there's a guy that you kind of want to keep, so you move around. How do you determine that person? As because 15s, this is why I asked. 12s, it's easy for me. Like you can find, if you can't find a drop on your team in a 12, you're playing in the wrong type of league probably, because that's just not fair. There's a lot of droppable parts. In a 15, it's trickier though, because like you just said, going through the waiver wire, you're digging through trash most of the time. So how do you determine who is a drop in a 15-team league?
So
I know it's dependent. I get it, but like, how do you do that?
So more often than not, it's probably someone that I've already added previously.
Okay.
I mean, as we'll get into some of like the examples of who I did drop in this team this year, it's more of so, okay, I'm sick of this player not doing what I expected them to do. I think they're drop worthy. So maybe I'll go into a week saying, okay, I'm going to drop Eugenio Suarez. Like, I'm sure I wrote down Suarez the week leading into Fab. I'm like, this is the last week, I'm done. So he's definitely off the team before even knowing that I needed to add someone. So I'll go backwards sometimes, is what I'm trying to say. But
does that ever change if you look at the pile of trash and there was no third baseman available, or do you force it?
I won't. So I think I mentioned this before, but so I drafted Suarez on my main event that placed, and then cashed. And then I also drafted him on my, I guess I auctioned him in my OLAC. And I tried dropping him the same week on both, and I could never get an ad in the OLAC. So I ended up keeping him the entire year.
That worked out well.
Blessing, I know. I just wish it was the other team, though. I mean, of course, a much different buy-in for the two. But yeah, so I mean, I tried to drop him, but there wasn't anyone worth. So there's also got to be like someone worth adding, because you can add anyone. But if they're not playing, if they're just not good, there's no point. So I might as well be like, okay, I'll take the bad production from Suarez and just wait another week, see what happens. So I didn't force it in his case.
Yeah, and that's why I wanted to ask, because some people, like, they will get fed up with a player, like, you got to be gone. Like at a 12, even, but this is why even a 12 is the ad, like there's got to be like a numerical value to this ad drop situation here, because you will find someone in a 12. You will. You really will. But is that platoon player worth it? That's the question. And in a 12, maybe at the time it is. But in a 15, there might not be any options. So that's why I wanted to ask that. You also mentioned, so if you have three needs, you'll make three drops. Now, my question is, on the flip side of that, is say you have five droppable players, which is probably very, very rare in a 15. Just say you have five droppable players. Will you make five moves that week, or will you only stick to the three team needs and save that fab for later?
I won't force it. So I primarily look at I mentioned the bench and the start. So if I just need to tweak my starting lineup with an ad, I'll just make one ad. But if I have multiple fab guys on my bench that I'm not going to start, there's no need, unless I want to spec on somebody else. Like maybe they got hurt, they got set down. Okay, then I'll drop them immediately because there's no benefit in holding on to them for another week as long as they're still playing and in the majors. So I won't always make a drop because that fab is precious. Like, as you know, you go into the last week and you're down to as many ads as dollars you have left sometimes. So
no, that makes sense. So I was curious about that because some people you'll see force moves just because, hey, there's these cool guys available, even though you don't need them type thing. So I want to emphasize your team need to make your decisions for you, not just because this guy's available. And in the end, you know, you might miss out on that one guy because you didn't take the chance, but at the same time, now you have all that fab money and hopefully it pays off in a different way about it. I have a couple more questions before we rejoin where you left off there. You mentioned that you look at your league stats on where you could, you know, gain or lose points. When do you start looking at team stats? Because league stats, because a lot of people's like look right out the gate. Some people say, I don't want to look for a few weeks. There's a lot of moving parts. Do you look right out the gate, or who are you when you approach this?
I mean, I look at the standings, but when I add it to the fab process, maybe it's like June, because I don't want to fall too far behind.
Gotcha.
Maybe May, June. I mean, right now I can't really say for sure, but come next year, I'll get to a point where I think it's time to start looking and see where I'm maybe slipping, because I mean, it's 2 months of the season. If he's talking at the beginning of June, and your team could collapse in the last 2 months of the season. So it's an equal third. It's just that you're starting off with that first third. So I don't want to be too nonchalant about making sure I don't want to be too nonchalant about not checking my place in the standings and way too late, you know.
And then the last thing, and this will probably, it's probably more fab related, but I'll ask it now and then we'll discuss it in the fab portion of the show. When do you start looking at overall stats? When do your decision, your league, your team needs change to overall needs compared to league needs?
All right, so let me pull up that file because I'll tell you exactly.
Oh, he's got it out. I should have known. College.
Yeah, I have Rob DiPietro to thank for this. So when I first went on his podcast for my first ever podcast, he was kind and offered me a little info into how he tracks the overall for his teams. His process could have changed by now. This was 2 years ago. But so that first year, the first week I did it for was end of August. So like the date was 8/29. And then this year, my first time doing it was August 3rd. And part of that was because I went on Rob's show in mid to late August. So I didn't have as much time to use this process. But I think I may have overshot it because how, I don't know. It's tough to say what I did caused me to drop, or it was just my team wasn't meant to be, you know, because I don't know. I was like ninth. I forget when I started, whether I was in the top 30, 31, whatever pays out, because I was ninth for 2 weeks in a row. And I was definitely looking at it then. And that's when I started doing like this attack saves thing, because I had I could make up a lot of points in the overall by getting saves. And then I kind of got those points back though in K's in my league, but I wasn't running at like five closers. I was doing like a 6-3 where I've had six starters and three relievers. So I don't know if it put me in a position where it caused me to lose the league necessarily. I mean, my ERA and WHIP got very elevated due to a couple blowups that would have been in my lineup probably no matter what. It's not like I streamed them in or anything like that. But so if next year I get back into that position, I might try to wait to like mid August, maybe, mid to late again. And I think August 3rd is probably a little bit too early. I mean, but the thing was like, I was like, okay, I'm here again. I want to stay here and try to actually win now. Cause I finished third in 2022. I'm like, well, I want to try to be first now overall. And I thought my team was good enough to get me to that point. Injuries and other things got in the way, but so at least in August, I would probably lean more towards late August though.
Yeah. I was just wondering, cause I know, and I have a hunch you're going to check into that sometime this off season to see how that played out in your overall situation when you started attacking saves. Cause I wrote that down as a question, but you said you haven't looked at it yet. So I'm curious to see how that equates out, because that's another one of those strategies. Like, you know, we talk about streaming pitchers, how that's actually probably a bad idea in the end game. When you look at, they're on the waiver wire for a reason type conversation. Like, now if you hit it right, it's great. But if you stream, let's say you just stream one pitcher a week, that's 27 pitchers. Even if you go 50, it's like the old gambling adage. If you go 54% right, you're probably breaking even. Like, so is it really kind of worth the fab dynamics? Like, with the damage it does to your team first, what, like, it doesn't. I know I'm starting to ramble now, but some people kind of understand what I'm saying there. And it's just, so all these moves we make to try to gain points, when it goes back to, we probably might lose more points than gain at times just because of what we're doing and the time of year's difference. It's all a goofy thing. So I was just curious on what you did. If you can remember where you left off on your process, we'll jump into there. I know you're talking about, you know, getting ready for fab and whatnot, but did you have anything else before we get to the fab, actual fab process?
I think I know where I left off. So I go through the last thing I did on the sheet was I go through the stats for my teams. And then what I do next, so I have all these streamers on this sheet. I have all the two starters. I have my team needs. I have any spec closes. I have team streaming or good streams for like hitters on teams. And then I will go through hopefully the same day, because I don't want to, I try not to do this on Sunday. But so if I'm golfing on Saturday, time's a little short.
Yeah.
Yeah, so it's also summertime, so I'm trying to enjoy the nice weather. But I'll go through my teams, and based on what my needs are, whether a player to start, player for my bench, I'll go through free agency, and I'll do a bunch of $1 bids with the players who I want to drop, and I kind of leave it. And then I'll come back Sunday, maybe add or drop if someone got hurt or if someone else popped up that I want to potentially add for my teams. I'll add them to my bid list, and then I'll do the dollar values. Okay. So, and that's on Sunday.
All right. Well, I will save the dollar value questions for Fab. So let's start talking to Fab then. We talked a lot about the process leading up to it. I think that's a good thing, because some people just like look at the RotoWire grid, they'll listen to a podcast or two, or they'll read an article or two on top Fab targets. Like, that's all they'll do. And they'll go straight to their waiver wire, which, hey, that works for you. Awesome. But you broke down all the other things you look at as a part of it, and a part of it is actually team needs, all these different little factors involved in it. Now, we have 27 Fab weeks, Ben. You have a $1,000 budget. Before the season starts out, how do you start planning how you want to spend your money as we start diving into the week-by-week situations?
So I don't necessarily plan it out week to week. I do start – so I mentioned in the – sheet that I use to track my what my plan is for each week. I do have a running balance, and then I also have dollars per week. And so essentially, when you're starting out fresh, so say you draft in the NFBC before the first Fab run, which is usually the Sunday before the Sunday, I think is how it works. So with 1,000, that's 27 weeks technically. So if this main event drafted after that first week, so I only had 26 weeks of Fab, which helps. But it's only $37.04 per week is what on average you can spend with a $1,000 budget over 27 weeks. So I watch that number go down as the weeks go by, that dollar per week typically. And I know that, okay, you're going to be like, if there's a big call up early in the year, or if something happens, like, I guess like Kirby Yates, I didn't bid on Kirby Yates this year. I didn't really need to, but if I wanted him, I know I'm going to have to drop a couple hundred dollars on him. So you know that you're going to take a good chunk out of that dollar per week number. It's just that you don't want to keep seeing it go down and down and down and down and down each week. Because once you do that, I mean, you're like in my one main event on July 7th, I was down to $9.42 per week the rest of the year. Cause I went after Noelvi Marte in that league, and I bid over $200 on him. So I went from $28 per week to $9 per week with that one move. And so you just gotta be careful of that. And like, I'm okay doing that. I just want to make sure that I have my eyes on it, so I can adjust my my spending habits going forward once something like that happens.
That's smart, because if you do like three of those in a row, you're all of a sudden down to next to nothing before you know it. So it's good to be like, hey, you can make like one or two of these a year, like go for it moves, but you can't do it as often as you want type thing. And I guess that goes back to, you kind of stay true to like, does my team need this? Like you mentioned Kirby Yates, I didn't really need saves at the time. Now, again, like I said, that can come back and backfire because Kirby Yates is one of the best closers in baseball. But at the same time, you weren't also out there spending $1 million on, you know, Victor Scott and some other guys like it probably doesn't pan out. It probably doesn't work more often than it works. Let's put it that way, for the big money spends. Cause even if you spend a ton, is it, you know, points per dollar, as we say in DFS, does it actually pencil out type situation instead of like constantly streaming the position and getting a home run or two here, a home, like stuff like that, probably equates a little differently, but you know, that's a tough one to tell. So as you go in to the fab, you talked about your process, looking at it, you got all these goodies. Do you want to start going over the weeks, or do you have anything else you want to add before this process? I actually have one more question, but anything else you want to add?
No, we can do that question if you want, yeah. And then go into the ads.
What I was going to ask is, because one of the reasons you have to dig so deep through the trash in 15s is you're trying to make a move because your team has a need. How deep is your waterfall? Do you usually go? Because you mentioned like in your OLAC, you couldn't find a replacement. You probably had a bid or two in each week, but there's probably only two or three options and everyone else needed or whatever, stuff like that. Cause it happened to me. And 15s happened to me way more than I thought, especially in Bubba and the Bloom leagues. Like my listeners know who I like. I was just shooting into the wind some weeks. It was horrible. So how deep does your waterfall go? I guess, does it depend? It might depend on how desperate you are to fill the need, I guess, but, how do you fill your waterfall?
It's actually funny. So I love the NFBC because of how much detail they go into tracking everything. And so I pulled up my, you'll be familiar with this. It's the MyFab results tab. Yep. And so I'm looking at literally the last week of the year. I had a bid for a starting pitcher that went 13 deep. I also had a bid for a hitter. I'm thinking it was an outfielder that went 18 deep. Granted, it's the last week of the year. You need something away at this point. So yeah, it's a little more extreme. I had a 14 that week. So I spent a lot of time in that last Sunday. I wish it was a little more fruitful. But let me go to July 14th, for example.
Yeah, it's been a random middle of the
July year. 14th, I made one ad. Lawrence Butler was actually my top bid. I was outbid though. Yeah. He was one of 13 names for an outfielder.
April 21st, one bid for the week and 13 players. I just want to mention this guy. So whatever, you said June 21st,
April 21st. So April early 21st. In the year, I had one for two. So this is when Hector Neris was losing his job. So I had a two-person bid of, we'll get into it. I said that backwards. It was when Adbert Asley was losing his job. So I had Neris and Leiter. Yeah. So I had a two bid, but then I also had a 12 bid for an outfielder, a 12-person deep bid for an outfielder. So I
guess that also shows, usually, unless it's the last weekend of the year and you just want a body, there's usually more options when it comes to hitting, especially like outfielders. Right. You can stream outfielders, at least platoon outfielders, throughout a week, where pitching can get pretty really bad in a 15. That can make you question playing the format at times when you go to that fab waiver wire and go, what are we doing here? All right, so that's interesting. So yeah, it obviously varies, but it seems like you're hitting, you go, basically it sounds like, and those are just a couple examples, obviously we're not doing them all, but you wanted to make sure you're leaving with something more often than not. So that's pretty, at least in the hitting department, instead of a wasted pitcher. That makes sense as well.
Well, yeah. Well, if you remember, then the listeners, if they listen to part one, is that my pitching was pretty strong for this team.
Yes.
Cause I started out with the four starters early. So I was basically rolling out most of the same pitchers each week. So I didn't want to get too desperate throughout the year with rolling out a crappy 15 team depth caliber starter, you know? So I was always, and we'll get into my ads maybe too. We'll talk about this there, but like, I ended up getting some hitting holes because of drops and then other people not performing. So it was more team dependent probably. If I was desperate for pitching, it probably would have been flipped.
Yep. Gotcha. No, that makes a lot of sense. Again, back to team needs and whatnot. And it's something we've talked about on this show, at least I have, is some of my leagues great in hitting, bad in pitching and vice versa. So you can probably guess where my waiver needs went, and those are where they should have went. Maybe they didn't, part of the problem on those teams, but all right, let's go. Let's talk about fab, and we won't go like super deep all the time, but there are some very interesting ones. And if anything, just kind of the thought process of what was going on, and you'll remember it much better than I will, obviously. Week one, there was no moves because Ben drafted after the week one fab for this one. Week two, Ben adds Graham Ashcraft, drops Kyle Hendricks. We talked about Hendricks earlier. Grabs Michael A. Taylor, drops Garrett Mitchell. The Pirates, remember, very clearly faced almost all lefties that first week. I remember that very, very clearly. And then Jesus Sanchez drops Johnny Brito. Man, that's a fun Jesus pickup. Probably didn't last long, I'm just guessing. But, yeah.
Next week, he was gone.
Yeah, he was up and down all season. But, man, just looking back, he's one of those that you sit back and go, man, if I just kept him for the whole year, not bad. Like, it actually works out. But I don't think anybody with the sane mind would have been like, yes, you need to hold him. He was probably an easy drop in most formats at times. So, so we'll just start with this in week two. Ashcraft, Taylor, Sanchez added, Hendricks, Mitchell, Brito dropped. Any thoughts on this?
Yeah, Mitchell would have been held, but he broke his thumb or whatever the issue was with him.
Yeah.
And Brito was just a swing and a miss on the fifth starter for the Padres. The one thing, though, that I'm looking at here is I feel like I overspent. So I spent 18, 12, and 8, and I feel like Sanchez and Taylor were just streams. So people say all the time, when you have $1,000 ready to go, you really want to spend it, and you want to make sure you get these guys. But I probably could have saved some money by maybe cutting those in half. Like, I didn't put the runner-ups for what I sent you, but
that's fine.
It's probably like I probably overspent by a little bit on those ads. It's more of this being a little more aggressive than I probably needed to be.
And something you just mentioned there, I'm curious to get your thoughts on, because I talked with Mike Curlin about it, especially when he first started doing the main event 2 years ago, I think it was. One reason you do the long waterfall is usually you do a lower bid per se, because you realize it's a streamer. That's, you use the word streamer, and that's what I want to hit on, because a lot of the bids throughout the week, the season, are going to be streamers. They're not, you know, unless you're breaking the bank, they're not locked into your lineup, most likely, unless they strike gold. So when you mention you overspent on a streamer, like in your head, as the season goes on, obviously budget might depend on it, but do you kind of think I'm spending like $5 or less? Are we trying to go like $3 streamers? Like, do you have a kind of philosophy on how you want to approach that? Or does it depend on who's available on the wire, I guess?
It's more of a feel. It kind of goes down to how much do I really need the ad, and who's my top choice? So what I say, like, I know people always will ask, not necessarily me, but when I see people ask others, okay, how much do I bid? I'm a lot in my mind. I say, okay, well, whatever I'm comfortable spending to get this player, it really comes down to that. Like, if you try to figure out, okay, what's the optimal bid, you're going to go crazy. And you're probably
there's no perfect science to this at all. Zero.
No.
That's why I show the OC bids on this show. It is bonkers. So yes, yeah, sorry.
No, that's good. That's a good point. And, so I think I was better this year about spending less on. I'll try to do it even more next year. At least I saved this one team's bids, so I have an idea of what I did spend. Maybe I'll go back and add the drops as a reference. I mean the runner up values, but I don't have like a hard and fast rule for streamers. It's just really if I think they could stick. So maybe they're a streamer with upside for staying on my team. Maybe I'll put a little bit more in. I don't know. There's a lot of different things that go into the dollar, and I try not to think about it too much, because then, as like, you know, you can kind of get crazy looking at the numbers all the time. Yeah,
there's a couple leagues I guarantee you I probably about felt like another $1,000 that I could have kept if I didn't overbid in some OCs, because those just suck. At least in mains, for the most part, especially as the season goes on, they stay kind of tight. There's not, like, again, there's no proven formula, but a lot of these smart players kind of have an idea. Like, they go, let me ask you this before we go far. Do you look at what your opponents have financially when you make your bids?
No.
Okay. Nope. Yeah. I remember the guild said he did that. I'm like, how do you have that time?
Like, that was Mike's thing last year. I remember him talking about it all the time.
Yeah. Curlin, that's true. He did. And I know, I guarantee you a lot of other guys do. I guarantee you a lot of them probably do. And that's one of those I just can't wrap my head around, is like you mentioned earlier, it's summertime. I want to go, you know, touch grass or go do stuff like that. Go to a ball game, go play golf. Like, I got my daughter. I want to go to the water park. Like, there's a million things I want to do. As much as we love this game we're discussing on this show for the second part of this episode, there's also a part where you have to, like, get out and enjoy life. So you got to kind of, you know, maximize your time, but don't overdo it, I guess, is what I'm trying to say.
I think I put enough time into other aspects of it where I shouldn't do that. But also, too, like, as the year goes on, people's budgets go down. So their previous bids can't be applied going forward unless you try to apply some curve to it where it declines or decreases their bit. Like it goes, it'd you're be talking very to the complex. Wrong
caveman for that. There's no yeah. chance that's getting applied.
You ran out of stone tablet when I started talking.
Yeah. It's hard to make the curves with the mortar and the pistol thing and all that kind
you
of
got
stuff.
You got the wheel though, right?
I do got the wheel. I beat you guys to that one. That's for sure. So we got that going, but yeah, no, that's just not happening in my world.
No.
Week three. This is fun. Blaze Alexander. There goes Jesus Sanchez. Blaze for $38. Martin Perez dropped Jimmy Garcia for $14. And the other reason why these are fun is like you did the right thing at the time with Jimmy. Now we all look back going, that could have been interesting. But Blaze was a big pickup at the time. And that was a fun one because he comes up, takes over for injured Perdomo. Was it Perdomo at the time that got hurt?
And
takes over. And he's also kind of filling in for Marte, who's banged up off and on. And there's the whole Suarez conundrum. So, but then at the same time, people are like, well, Jordan Lawler's going to be back soon. We've heard that a lot that year, this past year. So what was your thought process on going and getting Blaze and dropping Jesus and then Martin Perez and dropping Yemi? And another thing I want to highlight real quick, Blaze is an infielder. Jesus is an outfielder. It's called streaming, folks. This is how you do it real quick. You don't have to go, fill position spots by dropping position spots. But continue with this one.
Yeah, so you got my wheels turning when you mentioned the position or the streaming. And I think what allowed me to do this was because I had Jeff McNeil, who was second base outfield. I also had the mascot, Renjifo, who had all the eligibility. So I was probably covered at all my backups, quote unquote, for my positions. So I had two bodies for every position potentially. So I probably could, this is probably like one of those examples where I say, okay, I need a utility player and I'll drop Sanchez for whoever I get. And I think with Blaze, so I spent a little bit more, I spent 38 on him compared to the other bids from the week before. So I think it was more of I was looking more long-term with this one because of the opening of Perdomo being injured. But I mean, as we all know, Blaze and was this when Tyler Black was the other one?
Yeah, it was. Yep.
It was like two of them. It was okay. Who did you want, Blaze or the other guy? And I went with Blaze. So I maybe got 1 week out of him, but other than that, it was kind of a waste.
Yeah, he was an up and down guy. So yeah, and I, just free looking at your board, your bids are kind of up and down, like price wise, not up and down on what you did, but it's just interesting. Like you're kind of high out the gate with limited bids, and you start seeing more single dollars. But there's some 40s in there. So week four, Josh Jung dropped Tyler Miguel for $114. I don't think you had a runner-up, if I remember correctly, on that one. Ryan Feltner dropped Martin Perez. So there's your stream, 12-0. Robbie Grossman dropped Michael A. Taylor. Taylor, a two-week stream, essentially, for $8. What's your thoughts here? I remember very, very vividly the Josh Jung conversation on the Fab recap. I'm just wanted to get your thoughts on these moves.
Yeah, it was just a mistake. I overshot the market. And I overshot the timetable. And I'm going to try to be more careful with hand and wrist injuries going forward. So my philosophy going into draft this year was not to draft any stashes, whether injury or otherwise. But if I could afford it in Fab, okay, I would make it an exception. And Young wasn't that exception. I ended up keeping him on this team until he came back. And he had some steals and some homers when he came back, but it was not worth keeping him. It wasn't even close to worth the Fab. So that's why I highlighted this one red. But I think at this point I may have made a move into first place in my league. I think I forget how the timing works out, but I was starting to go up to the top of the standings. I'm like, okay, well, if I can get Josh Jung when he comes back, I could have a really good team here. I mean, if in theory, I guess I was thinking properly, but I just spent way too much money and like people were dropping him after this, and hopefully I'll learn from it going into next year where I don't make that same mistake. But maybe I'll add a stash when they're a little bit closer to coming back, as opposed to like 2 months out, I think, at that time.
Yeah, well, and the thing is, the Young, it was a weird one. So I remember when you added him, you were thinking he was going to be out for like 2 to 3 more weeks. That's kind of how it was starting to feel, and then he had a setback, then another setback. It was just the never-ending Josh Jung conundrum. And again, hands and wrist, as you mentioned, this was the year for like what is going on with this. But the stashing thing, that's like a whole nother show probably on what to do with stashes, because I'm with you, like drafting a stash is kind of tough. I want to have as many bullets out the gate to start figuring things out and be able to adjust. And then as the season goes on, like, because I'm even guilty. I remember 2 years ago, I got Trevor Rogers for $1. He's back in 3 weeks. And then he was just about to come back, and then he never came back. So I got him for $1. So it didn't like crush me. But at the same time, it's like there's so many times could I have used that roster spot for 3 weeks? like, you know, again, a dollar didn't crush me, 114. You would have loved to have that money for something else. These are all kind of learning things, and you're good enough where you adjusted and still did just fine in the league. Now, that does make things a little better, I'll say. Week five, though, you made up for it. You spent big back-to-back weeks, and just real quickly, these were your two biggest spends of the entire season, because as we get to about week 21 on, it's almost all single digits after that. But you added Hector Neris, dropped Blaze for 134, your biggest bid of the entire season. And then added Mark Leiter Jr., dropped Robbie Grossman for 48. There's your Robbie Grossman stream. The Neris one in a 15-team, 134, I'd say he got you your money back, I'd hope. So you got that one in green. What were your thoughts on these two moves? Because Mark Leiter on the flip side, a little different.
Right, yeah. And I mentioned this at the time when we reviewed our ads, and I think I mentioned it briefly walking into this part of the show, but I drafted Edward Ezeley as my RP1 on this team. So I was – this is before he got hurt, so I was very upset going into this week that I knew I had to spend this much money because who was it, Council was the Cubs manager?
Not the Cubs, or, yeah, Council.
Yeah, I was just so frustrated that he was by far their best option at closer, yet they were still taking him out. I mean, he was hurt, though, looking back at it. Maybe he was hurt at that point, so whatever. But I knew my team was good, and I'm like, well, the one spot where I could be – looking at my roster, like the one spot where I was susceptible to getting a hole, whether it's like just falling behind the standings, was saves because I waited – I took Finnegan, who was not a sure thing at this point in the year. This is April we're talking about. And then now my RP1, this lost his job. So I'm like, I have to get his replacement. So that's why I went for Leiter and Neris. And I mentioned how good the NFBC is with tracking stats. So for the season, I can tell you what Neris got me. He got me 7 wins and 14 saves, albeit with kind of high ratios. But, I mean, that the 14 saves was invaluable. So.
And the 7 wins, that's tremendous. Yeah. And you said the ratios might be a little rough, but you have those ace pitchers that obviously that's kind of why you have aces. It helps offset potential situations like that. You don't want them, but it helps. So, yeah, for your team needs, that is a tremendous pickup. That is great. And you mentioned the Leiter as a backup plan, so you kind of had to be a little more aggressive. That makes sense. That's why we're going over this and kind of looking at it going, okay, no, that checks out. I also want to mention he had been added 2 pitchers. Drop 2 hitters. This is, again, something you can do, folks. I know I've been guilty of it early on. Like, okay, I'm looking to add a starting pitcher. Got to drop a pitcher. That's like where my head, like, I got to keep my roster balanced. No, you don't. No, you don't. That's the beauty of the streaming game is you just look who you can drop and go from there. Week 6, Matt Waldron dropped Cole Irvin, $14. You added Jake McCarthy, dropped Hunter Renfro, $12. Just looks like streaming moves. I think Renfro got hurt. Around that time. So any thoughts on those ones?
No, I actually ended up adding both these guys back eventually. So we can gloss over it, yeah.
Week 7, Winfield Perez, who was actually leading off and being pretty good for the Tigers for a window there, dropped Mark Leiter for 34, added Patrick Sandoval. We've all made that fun move. Dropped Matt Waldron for 14, added Quintana, dropped Feltner for 8, added Yaz, dropped McNeil for 8. McNeil, he drafted one of your – it's been a while since you dropped a drafted player. I want to highlight that as well. You have not dropped a drafted player since the first Fab period. So you went about 7 periods before you dropped another drafted player. So that's pretty intriguing, all things said and done. So what's kind of going on here? You're adding a couple streaming pitchers, it looks like, a couple outfield bats. What do you got going on here?
Yeah, so I dropped Leiter. So this is after it kind of seemed like Neris was – going to be the closer going forward. I'm like, okay, well, I can kind of free up that roster spot. And outfield ended up being kind of my biggest need of trying to fill it throughout the season. So I thought, like, Perez, I got relatively cheap. I think I actually, $34 isn't that bad, but he was playing full-time switch hitter, had some speed, decent average. And I needed average early on with this team. So I held on to Perez a lot. He was kind of empty. He was almost like a 1-for-1 Jeff McNeil replacement, I guess, ironically, but he was definitely better than McNeil. And then Sandoval, I think I added him for the stream. I don't remember, but with the hopes of maybe having him stick, because I think he had a really good start before this and maybe had a good matchup. His
peripherals looked good. I remember like there was a lot to him, or especially early. We were like, oh, come on, man.
Yeah, then he kind of ruined my ratios eventually. So I dropped him. We'll see that drop eventually, but I think Quintana was just like a normal stream, probably Strzemski as well. But 8-8 for those streams probably could have knocked that down a little bit. But
yeah, but it's still one of those things that it's like, I know it's all in hindsight, but looking at these is, if you go throughout a season and you're adding streamers for $5 to $10, but you're adding 2 to 3 streamers a week, again, I'm not quick with math at the top of my head, you could probably survive on that throughout the year. Just going to say, like, you could probably make that work. So when you're saying you can drop it, yeah, because it could give you more ammo later, sure. But at the same time, you're not sitting there going, yeah, I'm streaming this dude for $64, because in OCs, you see that. And that's where I'm just like, what are you doing? So, yeah, at least you can live with, like, those $8 type bids. This next one, I remember this very clearly as well. Added Mason Black, dropped Quintana, $44. This is when Black was, you know, the next big thing coming up from the minors. Then added Eddie Rosario because, you know, a big week against righties. I know that as well. Dropped Yaz, $8. So another $8 stream there. And then Mason Black, if you want, you can discuss this. If you don't, I understand.
I kept Rosario for too long. I thought he would be one of my fixes for my outfield needs. I think he ended up hit, what did he hit? So I had 106 at bats of Rosario, hit 179 for me. So did not help. I held on to him for too long. I thought, I'm like, there's no way he can hit this low forever. He hit that low forever. So, oh well. And then Black, yeah, like we talked about him, I didn't have to break the bank on him. He may have had good matchups too. So, I mean, for $44, I guess it's worth a shot. He may hit, maybe like that's whoever next year's Schwellenbach is, maybe. Yeah. I don't know. So
for 44, I get it. I guarantee if you looked back, if I was pulling up the stats from week to week on the highest prices and all that good stuff, I guarantee he went for a lot more. Like I
think I was kind of low on that, if I remember correctly.
Yeah, I think so. And we discussed it on that show because he was definitely pumped up as I even said, like, he's the deal, like the real deal in the minors. Now, does that translate? The question didn't translate. He's still super young. Week 9, you re-added Mark Leiter Jr., dropped Adbert Alzolay for $4. That's pretty much when we found out, I think, Alzolay is donezo for the season. So a $4 little stash ad's not too bad. One move for the week, too. See, that shows you discipline, folks.
Got to have it sometimes.
Yeah. Week 10, we get 4 more ads this week, and we get some green on the sheet here. Jock Jams dropped Jake McCarthy, $44. I'm guessing that was a big right-handed pitching week. Re-added Matt Waldron, dropped Mason Black for $24, which, considering what Waldron did, if you were able to get out right before it hit the fan, $24 was amazing. But like, you have a yellow or orange, probably because you waited a little too long, which I know I did as well. That's probably the guess. And then, wow, I'm going to keep track of this later. Albert Suarez dropped Garrett Whitlock. I wonder how many Albert Suarez times we get to talk about him tonight.
Too many.
And then added Nick Gordon and dropped Eloy Jimenez. I'm just going to say, like, Suarez, Patrick Sandoval, these guys, it's every year. The same dudes. These are the streamers. Like, I usually use Kyle Gibson as the example. These are the same guys. Same dudes. We do it every year. But how did this setup look for you? Because you made 4 moves this week after 1 the previous.
I mean, overall, this is probably one of my better weeks of what I got from these players. I may have dropped Suarez. Yeah, so I ended up dropping Suarez again after this. So I think this is my second time having him. No, it's the first time. So he went back and forth on his team a few times, Suarez. But Jock, yeah. So someone had dropped him, and I'm like, wow. I mentioned before, outfield was one of my weaker spots on this team. And I'm like, well, I'm sure he had a good matchup, Jock, that week, but I really wanted him, and I kept Jock the rest of the year, and he was like a staple of my lineup most weeks, even with 2 righties in the segmented lineups periods. So that's why I highlighted him green. He was a big staple of my lineup. I can't remember, but I dropped McCarthy maybe in anticipation of Alec Thomas coming back. So I remember talking to Curlin a lot about this because we both had McCarthy like trying to be proactive, you know, and I'm fine with drop. So I ended up actually what happened was I added McCarthy the next week. So we'll get to that eventually.
Yes,
so
you did back. I like that.
Yeah. And then with Waldron, so I put him orange because I did start him for that blow up in August. And that's part of why my team dropped out of the overall was because of,
oh no.
Yeah. So I had 96 innings of Waldron, 78 strikeouts, 5 wins, a 1.17 whip, so that's very good. Yeah. But because of that start, he had a 4.97 ERA for me. So
it
was going so well until that start. And I remember checking my phone. I was doing something. I came back to it. I go, oh, no. I got the deflation that you get from seeing a start like that, especially when you're competing for the overall, it's just it's the worst. And so that's why it was good. And then it became very awful at the end. And then Nick Gordon was a stream, and I think he had like a homer and two steals. So, and I dropped him right away. So it was a good week. It's just that it didn't, all of it didn't end well, I guess.
Yeah. But overall, like you said, a good week. Can't win them all, obviously, in the Waldron one. Then I just like going over this because we're looking at prices. Like, you dropped them, but you got back in on the game. Like, once you drop a guy, just keep an eye on them. That's why they're streamers, obviously. And Waldron had a hell of a run. Like, he really did. And just kind of, you know, came crashing down at the end. Then, like, the following week here, you go right back to Jake McCarthy. You drop Nick Gordon for $14. We know how Jake McCarthy probably helped your team quite well. We'll talk about when you got rid of him, because you had to, because he had like a month where he was just awesome. And then it was just, I think I held on to him too long, honestly, in a couple leagues. But you got McCarthy. You added Gio Urshela, and you dropped Eugenio Suarez for $8. And you added Max Meyer and dropped Graham Ashcraft for $4. A couple moves that didn't work out this week. Max Meyer, Ashcraft, kind of a blank because they both never really did anything. But you've talked plenty about this. You don't have to if you don't want to. But anything else on this week?
So I'm kind of curious about, let me see if I can pull it up, because I was talking about what
Gio Urshela did for you for the whole season, because it won't match up.
Okay, this is fun. Well, actually, I can compare the both. So I mean, I just want to like revisit this so much because I love the pain. But let me go back to, all right, so on the year, he's not even showing up there. So corner infield. So at this point in the season, Eugenio Suarez had 184 at bats for me. 19 runs. This is the beginning of June. 19 runs, 3 home runs, 24 RBI, 2 steals, hitting .207. That's what he did for me, Suarez. Yeah,
worthy of a drop.
What was that?
That's worthy of a drop.
Oh yeah, we talked about, okay, there was talks of Jordan Lawler getting called up, yep. Suarez getting DFA'd, all these things, just losing playing time, and then Gio Urshela had roughly this amount of at bats. He had .222 for me, so that was a really good average upgrade that I got with the Urshela, because my team needed average at this point. But it happens. I want to see who else, how big my bid list was, because that was really, I mentioned how my OLAC.
What if there's someone else you could have got instead of Gio? That you really want to torture yourself right now.
I don't know if this is good or bad.
If you guys are watching this on YouTube, this is not going to be good.
He was literally my only bid for dropping Suarez.
Also, if someone else would have outbidded you on this, you still would have been stuck with Eugenio.
Yeah, I would have been stuck, and I would have gotten 26 homers, whatever it is, and like 80 RBIs in 4 months.
Oh, man.
I can't believe one player has caused me so much pain. But all right.
There's always next year, Ben. There's always next year, as they say. man, sometimes you got to go through it. But Jake McCarthy, you dropped Nick Gordon for him. We'll get to when you dropped him, but you had him for about a month, and that paid off. Probably got you plenty of steals along the way, huh?
He actually didn't steal as much this year as we expected him to. It was kind of weird. Where's McCarthy? So I had him for .259 average, 4 steals, and 81 at bats. So he probably had a decent amount of playing time on my bench, though, too, because he was kind of platooning, but then he was doing the short side, which is weird because he's a left-handed hitter. Yeah, so he had better average on my bench, of course, McCarthy, than in my lineup, go figure. But, he was tough because I never thought Thomas should play over him, but that's what it seemed like when Thomas was coming back. And just I didn't want to get stuck holding someone when I could potentially flip it for something that I thought would be playing going forward, you know.
For sure. The following week, back to just one move, AJ Puck dropped Mark Leiter, $8. That was when Puck got moved to the bullpen. There was speculation he'd be closing, and you were starting to probably get ready to start chasing saves, I'm guessing, about this time. So that made sense. I'm speaking for you, but tell me if I was wrong with that one.
Yeah, so I dropped Leiter. So this was just more of insurance, because I at this point in the season, I had Kyle Finnegan and Hector Neris as my two closers. So I didn't feel too safe. And at this point, I'm first in my league. It's a main event. I'm like, I really want to make sure my saves are somewhat secured. So I was he was my one stash reliever, essentially, Puck.
Gotcha. Week 13 now, you got Garrett Mitchell back. You dropped said Mullins. and I like how you have it in orange here, because it kind of is a wash almost. Like, it's not bad. It's not great. And it was only $22, which is fun. And it took a few weeks before the Brewers realized just play Garrett Mitchell. But Sed also woke up. Like, you had a trend here with Suarez and Cedric. You woke them up, apparently. They heard Ben Tidd out of the northeast section of the country dropped you in a main event league, so it's time to start playing better. So you added Garrett Mitchell, dropped Mullins for 22, added Drew Thorpe, dropped Patrick Sandoval for 22. So you had Sandoval for a little while there, which was fun. And he was good and bad. That's the thing. Like, he'd have his moments and he wouldn't. But you got Thorpe, who was really good without the strikeouts for a while. But did you stick around long enough to get Thorped?
No. So let me check. So I think – so it's, I actually widely added Thorpe across all my teams because he had kind of gotten blown up in his first start and the price went down super low. So like, okay, well, I'll just see. And then let me actually look this up. So my other two main events – this is actually really funny. So I never started Thorpe on this team, but I had him for 36 innings on my bench, and I never got the blow up. So it was just like a wait and see. But he was kind of like Suarez, where he did well in all of his bad matchups, Thorpe. So I never started him. I was never confident in putting him in my lineup in this team. And then he finally got destroyed, whatever, or what happened. He got hurt. And then so it was for nothing for this one. But I guess it's better than taking the 4.75 ERA.
Yeah, for sure. Yeah, so that's not too bad if that's all it was type situation for Thorpe.
And Mitchell, I put him in orange because I feel like he was kind of comparable to what Mullins did from here on out. It's just that Mullins did get hot like literally right away when I dropped him. And then I don't know what the stats look like for Mullins off my team, but it wasn't like a complete Suarez disaster, I would say.
Yeah, no, that's fair. The next week, you got rid of someone else again, but you got Brendan Rodgers, dropped Eddie Rosario, $12. I love that. Like, Brendan Rodgers was sneaky, productive, like nothing flashy, but a really good floor. I think a great 15 team, like middle infielder type dude, especially down the stretch. So I think for $12, that pans out pretty nicely. Lamont Wade dropped Winfield Perez, $8. Wondering if that was a corner infield stash over your shoulder or not. Cal Quantrill dropped Albert Suarez for $4. That's called a lateral move. And then Hunter Harvey dropped Max Meyer for $3. And that was around the trade deadline. So that could have been when people thought Harvey was about to get some closing options there. So again, trying to like get some more closers for $3. That's not too shabby. So what was your thoughts on this week 14 set of moves?
Yep, you nailed the Hunter Harvey spec. Cal Quantrill was away. So I think I actually streamed them for that. Didn't go well. I don't think it was awful though. I forget why I had Wade. I remember this. So I was pretty happy to get Rodgers and Wade because they were both coming back off the IL. And so I dropped Rosario and Perez. I mentioned before Rosario hit terribly, so I was dying to get him off my roster. And Perez had kind of slowed down. He wasn't really doing anything. So I kept Rodgers the rest of the year. I played him a good amount, especially like anytime they were in court, there's an automatic, he's in my lineup. And he hit .266 for me, Rodgers. And he had 7 homers in roughly a third of the year with like 34 runs. So he paced pretty well in my lineup. So the Rodgers ad was good. And Wade was just to see if he could, because like both these guys have good averages, Rodgers and Lamont Wade. And that's what I needed to shore up some more still. And so that's why I went after them. And another solid week. I mean, Harvey came out to be nothing, but like Rodgers and Wade, well, more so Rodgers was valuable the rest of the season for me.
Yeah, these are the kind of fun weeks where you can really start seeing where streaming can turn into potential holding situations, which is pretty fun. The next week, you had Tyrone Taylor drop Tyro Estrada. I'm guessing that's when Starling Marte probably hit the IL or something along those lines. And then Estrada just sucked. And then you added our boy, Rotary Munoz, dropped Cal Quantrill. That was fun for like one start, and then that got ugly quick. So thoughts on those kind of moves right there?
Yeah, I only got the one start out of Rotary. It wasn't good. It wasn't awful, but it wasn't good. And then, so I figured just try it out and see what happens. He had some promising underlying numbers, I thought, but for $1, it's all right. And then Tyrone, I thought he was kind of a dud because he was, I think it was the injury to Starling Marte. And he may have hit a homer that week, but he the average wasn't there for Taylor. And it was worth a shot for $8. So I think I was one of the more aggressive people adding Taylor that week, which I felt good about. I mean, he got the playing time the following week. It's just that he didn't really do as much as we were hoping for.
For sure. Week 16, though, you made a splash. And for $6, this was an amazing $6. You added Xavier Edwards and dropped Jake McCarthy. I think we've all known what Xavier Edwards did. But for six whole dollars, that'll make up for a bad year of Tyro Estrada in just like 10 weeks. That's pretty fun stuff.
Yeah, and I think he was unopposed, honestly.
That's good stuff right there.
Yeah, where's Lil Perfido? So we passed. Oh, he's the next week.
He's next week. Yeah.
Let me go back.
Yeah, you also had a Joshua Palacios at the drop rotary for $4, and I guess when the Palacios were facing a bunch of righties, I believe, and he was playing second base a lot.
Yeah, I think Palacios was a stream. It ended up working out pretty well, and yeah, Xavier was invaluable because he essentially filled my Luis Renjifo.
That's true when he got hurt. Yeah,
because I still had Renjifo at this point.
Yeah, what did you? Yeah, there you dropped in week 21. I just noticed that you hadn't dropped him yet. Yeah, that's right.
Yeah, so he may have already been hurt at this point, Renjifo, but yep, I got Edwards for $6, no backup. So I mean, and I think he had where is he? He got me 31 steals and 219 at bats with a 342 average. It was you can't. I wish it amounted to more winnings for me, but I mean, it definitely helped me end up where I ended up. So I can't really complain too much.
Yep, no, I like that. That Xavier for $6 was glorious.
It was a stream though too, and it turned into a season.
Oh yeah, pickup. Yeah, because most of us were just like, okay, he's going to lead off. He's got some speed. We can't have any power. He actually more power than I thought he'd have by the end of it, and it just kept snowballing into awesomeness until we kept trying to figure out do we start him or not with his back injury, but it still worked out in the end. Week 17, you got one move. Joey Lil Perfido dropped Tyrone Taylor for $4. I think that might have been the week I was on the Lil Perfido bandwagon because he went nuts the week before in Toronto and then forgot how to play baseball again. So, anything on him?
No, it's just this. I think this is after he got called back up, so that's why it was only $4.
Gotcha. All right, next week after that. See, this is why you don't always have to go crazy. A couple one-bid weeks gets Andrew McCutchen, drops Lil Perfido for $2. Stream, add, drop, simple game.
Yep. And McCutchen was a little disappointing. I ended up adding him again, but he was always a solid 15 teamer.
I was going to say he's a 15 team player. He was never on my 12 team list, but definitely a 15 team type player.
Yep.
Week 19, a couple more moves though. I know we talked about MJ Melendez dropped Lamont Wade. Melendez was showing signs of life before he got hurt. There's the underlying metrics still look good with Melendez. It's very frustrating. And then he got another beast of an ad for $4. You added one of Ryan Bloomfield's favorite players, Matt Wallner, and dropped Andrew McCutchen. Great, great move there. And then he added Robert Garcia, dropped Hunter Henry for $3, another save spec. So how'd you go about this week? So you got Melendez, Wallner, Garcia. That's a pretty nice haul, it feels like.
Yeah, so Garcia was – I think this is after Harvey got traded to the Royals. So then Garcia was the next man up. We still haven't hit the trade deadline yet. And then, Wallner – I think he was dropped the week before, and I got him unopposed for $4. So I got Edwards and Wallner for $10, no backup.
Damn.
In 2 weeks. And then, so you mentioned Melendez. So this is what I want to tie in. So I mentioned this, I think, when we did the first, I forget, maybe it was the last week of the season or last week. But so some of my big ads have been Jock Peterson, Garrett Mitchell. Now I have MJ Melendez and Matt Wallner. What do they all have all in common? There's two things they have in common.
Melendez, Wallner.
Jock lefty. And Garrett Mitchell.
Lefties. They're all lefties, so it could be.
And they're all outfielders. Yeah, so outfielders, my entire outfield, except for Anthony Santander and then Cody Bellinger, who I was between first and outfield, they were all platoon bats.
So they were
the best available, but they're all platoon bats, and this is why I'm going back to saying in the draft, I want to try to get going to next year, try to avoid this as much as possible because, when I look at I would write down my stats at the end of each week. My at-bats were not where I was hoping they would be. I was maximizing the at-bats because, my production was still high enough in runs, RBIs, and homers, but I wasn't getting the volume that I would have wanted to because I have, a two-week Monday through Thursday jock, and then I have a two-week Melendez. Maybe then I have a three-week Wallner. At least with Wallner, he started hitting it versus lefties, but
yeah.
I kind of walked into too many platoon bats. I mean, it was the best. I was trying to work with what I could, but it's just that it definitely hurt me a little bit, I think.
Yeah, it's interesting because Uncle Ted's saying, all lefty sluggers, platoon. If you're going to platoon, that's the guys you want, obviously. It's something that'll be fun to look at. We always talk about if you're going to kind of wait in a draft, there's always outfielders later. We talked about it in the two early meatball drafts, we started recapping things. There's tons of outfielders later, but at the same time, the later you wait on the outfielder, you start getting to more platoon outfielders, as you mentioned. So that becomes a what-if situation. So it makes me wonder, though, is streaming outfielders even in a platoon a bigger issue than streaming, say, a second baseman, because those guys already produce at a usually lower clip unless you get aggressive and get one of the studs early and then you stream out. Like, it's a whole chess match with what you're trying to figure out, but I'm just curious about that.
Well, streaming's fine though, but I kept all these guys because they were by far the best option. I was basically bench streaming lefty platoon bats on this main event from midsummer, so I was cycling through who had the best matchup each week. So, I mean, it was a lot of work.
Well, that's frustrating because then that doesn't always work out right. You read the wrong guy on the bench and whatnot. Yeah.
I left some Jock homers on the bench because it was like a two-game week or something. Like, it'll drive you nuts.
Yeah. No, that part I could see being on the tilting side of things. All right. After that strong fab week, we get to the deadline. Calvin Fauché. This is the last big bid from Ben. Dropped Robert Garcia for 108. That's called needing a closer and kind of worked out. Whit Merrifield dropped Yo Urshela. You finally got rid of that dead weight at $8. Will Benson dropped Palacios for $8. And Martin Perez back on the club dropped Drew Thorpe for $1. So now we're starting to get some streaming fun here. Benson obviously did not pan out. That did not last long. He's actually gone the next week. But
he didn't play that week when I added him. It was ridiculous.
Whit's interesting though, and obviously we know the full Shea thing. And Martin Perez was actually, once he got traded, was pretty good with the Padres.
Oh yeah, this is right before Perez crushed it. Let me see what his stats were for me. So for Martin Perez, I had 33 2/3 innings, 28 Ks, 2 wins, a 3.21 ERA, and a 1.25 WHIP.
That's outstanding. So
in a main event, 15-teamer, I was very happy with what I got from Perez. I don't know, because I remember the Padres had they faced the Pirates, Marlins. He had all these cake matchups.
Yeah, he had the Marlins a couple times, it feels like.
Yeah, it was a really good time for Perez. And so I guess I'll tie this into this other point. So at this point in the season, I had Dylan Cease, Michael King, Matt Waldron, Martin Perez. So I had 4/5 of the Padres rotation unintentionally. And I wonder if that gave me false hope, because at this point, so I added Fauché as my third closer at the time. I think I'm pretty sure at this point I was still competing for the overall. But then I think having the 4 starters from the same team, I ended up getting stuck into maybe not the best matchups, because going out of the All-Star break, I had 2 weeks where I had like a 2 or lower ERA for this team. And that vaulted me up into the top 10 of the overall. But then not much longer after that, I mean, there's only 7 weeks left, I came crashing down out of contention. And I wonder if it's because the Padres just had a worse matchup, because Waldron got crushed. I had to drop Perez. I wasn't trusting him against their matchups at that point. And then Cease kind of got cold at around this time too. He had a little rough patch. King stayed consistent all the way through, but there's 3 out of my 9, 8 pitchers that I had with potentially bad matchups. So I think that kind of hurt me. I don't know. You see what I'm saying? I kind of got thrown up there because of a good schedule, and then I guess got kicked right out because of the.
The hard part is how do you drop these guys right away until it's because they've been pitching so well? So then he got stuck with the Waldron, like you said, and
he was shaky, but then he just got destroyed. He was kind of slowing down, but it wasn't awful where I was going to drop him because of how good he had been. I was like, okay, it's a rough patch, and then he threw up eight earned in 4 innings or whatever.
It was. Well, then it makes it easy to drop after, but that's not the point of that conversation.
I was dying for Sunday night to come after that.
Yeah, you've had that a few times this year with pitchers, and I've been with you on that ride. Yeah. Hey, speaking of that, week 21, Albert Suarez. He's back. We put another check next to his name. You dropped Luis Grifo. That's ironic. $14. Sad week. Added Jason Hayward, dropped Will Benson for $3. Hayward returned from the IL with the Dodgers around that time and might have got traded, or no, he hadn't gotten DFA'd yet. So this was just pretty much a streaming situation, getting rid of some injured and dead weight in Benson, it sounds like.
Yeah, it was just I think they had a 7-game week in Cincinnati, and I think all righties, and I think Benson started 1 game because someone came back that started that week. It was just
The Rhys Hines week, or was that afterwards?
I think this is after Rhys Hines.
So it was probably when
it could have been Fraley or someone.
Yeah, Fraley or Friedel, one of them came back probably.
Yeah, it was gonna be a great stream for Benson, and then I really got nothing out of it. But oh well.
All right, we head to week 22. Is this about the time you started streaming or going saves heavy? When did that start for you, roughly?
It started with Fauché.
Okay, because here you go. You got week 22, you added Edwin Yaceta, who started taking over for the Rays when the injury to Fairbanks, dropped Grayson Rodriguez for $12, added Nolan Gorman, dropped Jason Hayward, who he just picked up for $6. Added Higgy, Higashioka, dropped Jonah Heim. This is when Heim wasn't playing that much, then that changed, but still I think Higgy outproduced him anyways. I think that was a good move all in all. So I always love seeing a nice catcher pickup and dropping some catchers there. But Yeseda, another closer to add to the arsenal for you.
Yeah, he ended up being I started Yeseda like every week after this because I lost Neris got DFA'd and then Fauché got hurt. So I was down to Finnegan and Yeseda. So it was worth getting him at this point. So he was my fourth closer. He was a spec because I think at this point I was still competing. It's week 22, and then I ended up finishing like 90th overall in week 27. Like it happens quick still at this point in the season. It's kind of crazy. But yeah, Gorman was a waste because he went 0 for 4 and then got sent down. He had a good week. I got like all zeros out of him. That it was awful. And then I guess it's kind of notable. So this is my first catcher move of the year. So I wanted to make sure, I think I said this last week, I wanted to have two decent catchers, and I had, in theory, Heim and what else did I have? Heim and Jeffers. Yep. So, and then I'm glad I made this move because Higgy had a lot of power that Heim didn't have. And I think Heim actually ended up, right after I dropped him, he started playing every day again, but he didn't do anything.
Yeah.
I guess I have that mush, or what do you call it, the reverse jinx.
There you go.
Yeah. But yeah, you said it was good. Of course, he had like a 1.3 ERA with me after he had a 0.8 or whatever it was leading up to a 0.6. But he got me some saves and helped me stay competitive. So it was worth it for $12.
All right. We're almost a dollar days here. Week 23, Jake Cave dropped Harrison Bader for 5. Austin Hayes dropped Nolan Gorman for 4. Randy Vasquez dropped Hector Neris for 3. Gio Urshela's back. Dropped Matt Waldron for $1. We're going to see a lot. Like Ben has a lot of like 4 to 5 move weeks coming up here. He's doing a lot of moving and shaking for the final month and a half or so of the season. So thoughts on what you're going through as the season went on with some of these moves, give the listeners kind of an insight on what you're doing with a more than usual, I guess, consistent ad drops.
So I'll note, so with Bader, he was a righty playing most of the time, but he was also kind of part-time on top of my other 4 platoon bats. So I really, besides Santander and Bellinger, I never really had a full-time outfield. And then losing Renhefel hurt too, because he was also full-time eventually. So it was just I had too many of those guys just to go back. I forgot about Bader because he was playing most of the time, but they gave him a lot of days off. And at this point, I think Marte was back. They had Jesse Winker. So outfield was full because of Winker. And Bader wasn't really playing that much. And then Cave had a Coors week. It was okay. It wasn't as good as I was hoping. Hayes was actually finally a full-time outfielder until he got his kidney infection. But I mean, it was worth it. And then Vasquez was a stream. I ended up not streaming him here, thank God, because I think he got crushed in that two-step. I wanted it as an option, but I decided against it, and I made the right move there. And then I think Gio was just a volume play as utility because I needed someone to start, and the Braves probably had 4 games or something.
Real quick, and I want to speak on that because so you added Randy Vasquez as a two-step. I think most people that add someone as a two-step, you're automatically plugging them into your lineup. Now you didn't because you maybe thought a one-step was better or whatever you had in your roster was better. What do you use to kind of help make that lineup decision as things take place? Just out of curiosity, it could vary from situation to situation, and you don't have to make it situation dependent for Vasquez, but just like in theory, if you made a 2-start move, what would you do to kind of change your mind after the fact on that? So listeners can know, hey, just because you made a move doesn't mean you have to start them type thing.
Right. So I kind of do this next thing when I go set my lineups. And what I do is, so I have a version of my rankings file that I use in the off season for like prep and making my rankings and all and on projections, all those things. So I have a copy that I call my pitcher tracker. And what I do is I import Fangraphs metrics that I look at in the off season into this for the, like the last 2 weeks, last 3 weeks for all the pitchers who have pitched over that time frame. And then I identify who's on my main event rotations. And then what I do is I look at their stats over the last few weeks, maybe potentially for drops too. I'll do it twice in a week. I'll do it on Friday looking to see, okay, is there anyone who's getting by, but they're like their underlying numbers are looking pretty poor. So maybe I want to drop them type thing, especially like with Waldron. So say if he was struggling, but and everything looked awful underneath the hood, then I would be like, okay, I'll drop him. But he never really got to that point. So that's why I kept holding on. Cause he was a little rocky, but I think the K rate and like the walk rate were fine. So he looked like he was okay, but I didn't catch it. is what I'm trying to say. But then what I do is I look at, so I'll write down my fringe pitchers that I have in this file on the same sheet where I have all these stats for my, for like the last 2 weeks. And then I go to pitcher list. I'll look at, okay, what do they think for these starters sit for next week? I go to Roto Baller. They have a more numeric game score prediction where it's like 65 is good. Typically like the highest you see is 70 and then it goes down to like 40, 35. And then I look at their opponents, the pitchers WRC plus over the last 2 weeks. And then I rank them all. And then I'll do, okay, so this is like, then I look at the rank, the average rank of those three different components. And I get another sense of, okay, this pitcher across these three different sources has the best matchup for this week. And so I think I may have had someone who was good enough where I didn't have to start Randy Vasquez for that week. Nice. Doing it that way.
I like just like the process going through that. You can realize that maybe this wasn't the best thing. Don't force it. Cause again, a lot of these two starts don't actually pan out the way we once thought they would. A couple more weeks to go here. Week 24, Cade Povich dropping Nick Lodolo. Povich was phenomenal down the stretch. Talked about him a lot. Adam McCutchen dropped Urshela again for $2. Added JP Crawford, dropped Cade for $2. Added John Gray, dropped Randy Vasquez for $1. Added Griffin Canny. We know why you did that. Dropped Martin Perez for $1. So you got three pitchers and two position players moving and shaking once again.
Yep. McCutchen was, he back in as a stream. I think I added Crawford because this is where Xavier went on the IL. So I didn't have a backup shortstop anymore. So I actually ran a poll of asking if I should start John Grace, Brady Singer, or Edwin Uceda. I think the masses, I had a decent turnout on the poll results for what I usually get of, I think they voted Uceda and Gray. I went with, they went with Uceda and Singer, I think, or it tied with Uceda and Gray. Gray got scratched, went on the IL. I got a zero and I lost K's by one in the final stretch. And if I had started Singer, I would have came in second place, but that's what happens. And then Canning was a stash for the great matchups versus the White Sox. Yeah. And Povich, I think this, I forget if he had a good start yet, but he ended up finishing really strong for me. And that's why I highlighted him green. He really was someone I relied on down the stretch. And even though people would have thought he didn't have a good year on the surface, but he pitched a lot better in the last few starts.
Yep. He was awesome. Week 25, Garrett Crochet dropped John Gray for $3. Crochet had two starts that week, but then he only pitched one inning or one pitch before he got left out of that one, because I made that move as well. I was with your thought process there. Added Jared Triolo, who was really good late, dropped Austin Hayes for $3. Added JT Jen, dropped Calvin Fauché for $2. Added Ciani, dropped Crawford for $1. Added Davis Martin, dropped Puck for $1. Added Jonah Bride, dropped Whit Merrifield for $1. That's some fun bidding right there for down the stretch streaming. So what are you running with on this one?
Yeah, I think I actually missed out on the Crochet one inning because I ended up getting 12 innings from him, four per week from here on out.
You might doubt that because I picked him up for the 2-7 going, okay, I at least get 8 innings. I can get like 12 strikeouts and good ratios. And then the whole rain thing, pitched literally one pitch. And they, you got to be kidding me.
Yep. Yeah, I had that happen with Dylan Cease earlier in the summer, which also could have been more strikeouts that I could have used. But yeah, I was thinking at this point, I was pretty good in wins. I was leading my league in wins almost all year. I ended up in second by one. That could have mattered too, but I mean, a win isn't guaranteed no matter who you start. So especially in a 15 when you're trying to stream, but I wanted the ratios and the high strikeout rate from Crochet. He was kind of like a glorified middle reliever for me with no win potential, which I was fine with. So it was worth it for $3. Triolo, I could have considered highlighting, but I think I looked back and he wasn't as good as I thought he was. For me, I think I also missed out on a steal and a homer maybe on my bench, but he was playing every day, so I played him a lot down the stretch. At this point, this is week 25, so I'm just trying to get anything that's alive. Jake again was a bad stream. Ciani ended up being nothing. I maybe got a steal from him, but he's just a bad hitter, so it was more of a waste, but it was only $1. Davis Martin didn't really – I had so much faith in him because he was facing the Angels, and he just never came through. It was frustrating to see him kind of struggle down the stretch. And he has some promise. He has some decent starts, but I was like, I don't know. I wrote about him in Sports Ethos. So I was put my money where my mouth was, but it was just not what I was hoping for. And then Bride, I remember telling you like the Marlins stream the last week of the year, but he hit a two homer game for me and he just crushed it. So that's why I highlighted him as, even though it was week 25, but he was huge down the stretch for me and competing. So yeah.
Yeah, no, I'm with you, Jonah Bright. I added some 15s as well, so I like that move quite a bit. Second to last week, week 26, added Alec Marsh, dropped Jen for three, added Kyle Stowers, dropped Melendez for one. Those are total streams. I've seen those names mentioned a ton. Did you have anything on those two guys?
No, Marsh was kind of like also a wait and see, like I did with Randy Vasquez. I don't think I actually ended up playing Marsh, and he also lost that start in weeks 27 because of Lorenzo coming back, but it doesn't hurt just to give yourself options, I guess.
For sure. Then that final week, you added Tyler Anderson, dropped McCutcheon yet again for $3. Added Ivan Herrera. That worked out well. Dropped Brady Singer for $1. Added Yuli Gurriel. Dropped Canning for $1 because he didn't get the White Sox start. Dropped J.P. Crawford, or added Crawford. Dropped Albert Suarez for $1. Added Brady Basso. Dropped Alec Marsh for $1. That didn't pan out as much as we would have liked, but a lot of moving and shaking for the final week, Ben. So how'd that pan out?
Yeah, going into these ads, I was in first place on my main event, and I am adding Tyler Anderson, Yuli Gurriel, J.P. Crawford, Brady Basso.
Well, let's tell you, what's the thought process in adding those guys, being in first place? What was your like goal to accomplish, I guess?
I was just trying to survive because I think I told you either on the show or just throughout the week how I had dipped out of first place, and then I ended up getting back into first place, and I was just dying for it to end. And with Anderson, he faced the White Sox. So this is like the third time they had screwed me over, the White Sox. I had Suarez versus them. I had JT Ginn versus them. And I had Tyler Anderson versus them. And they all three starts were bad. Herrera actually was good because we talked about this. He ended up starting like all the games in course. He hit a homer. He had like a 400 average. So it was a great switch out. Gurriel, I don't think he really did much. And then Basso I knew he lost a two step, but the one he gained or the start he kept was still ideal, or like it looked good. I think it was the Rangers, and they had been struggling.
It was unbelievable. Yep. I remember it very clearly now.
Yeah. And Basso just, I tweeted. So I think one thing, and I kind of did this earlier, I'm not going to be able to find the tweet, but it was talking about how I can probably pull up because I have this open right now, but we never talk about who we, bypass, I guess, when we do these ads, because like, remember when I looked up the Gio Urshela ad when I dropped Suarez, we were looking at who else did I have on my list. So when I went to add Tyler Anderson, this is the order that I had. I went Tanner Houck first. I was outbid. Tyler Anderson second. I had Cannon third, who ended up getting 2-1. I think I was going to be outbid by Cannon though.
Yeah.
So I had Tyler Anderson second. Brady Basso was fourth on my list. Then Kahanowitz was fifth. I may have been outbid on him, but he ended up doing well. And this is where it gets annoying. So my sixth bid behind Basso and Anderson was Tyler Alexander, who ended up doing like 4 scoreless or something with 6 Ks. And then I also had Grant Holmes below that. And we talked about how good he was. I don't know what the bid was for him, but I lost him out.
Because he got that Tuesday start, that game 2 start of the
doubleheader. He got 9 Ks in that week, Grant Holmes. And then the other unopposed, the player that never got added that did well, and I tweeted this out too, was Chris Flexen. So he was my eighth option. So I picked Anderson and Basso ahead of Chris Flexen and Tyler Alexander. They were all for $3. This is how I ordered them. And I ended up picking the two wrong guys. And I had two great starts on the free agency. So like that hurts, but I probably would have ordered them the same. I mean, it's Chris Flexen. He had a good matchup though. That's why I had him on my bid list. It's just, I guess that's luck. Right there, but it's annoying when you're so close to getting it right.
Now, that's one of the things that, like, each week looking back, that's why I kind of had the waterfall question, because you don't always get the waterfall, or you get outbid, you get a secondary option, or whatever. But in the end, it's like you look at it and go, dude, look at the guys I could have had, but I picked so and so. And that'll happen a lot, just kind of like the guys we dropped, and you can't really get too mad as long as you, I think if you're consistent throughout the season, it should play out, is what the way I try to tell myself. I could be totally just fooling myself to make me feel better. That's part of life. But after these 27 weeks, you finished where you finished. You did your thing, didn't hang on, but we've talked about that enough. I looked at, you dropped, I think I might have lost track, out of the 30 players you drafted, I think you only had 12 or 13 of them left on your roster, which is little less than half, which goes to the point where we talk about, you know, a lot of the guys you draft, it's fun, but in season, you're going to do a lot of moving and shaking. And that's in a 15-team league where Ben got rid of over half of his roster, all things considered. So you've done your fab. You talked about looking at all these scenarios for starting guys already. what else do we need to know about in-season management for your main event team that might help the listeners in the future?
We need patience. I think that's a big part of it. And try not to get caught up in the big ads. So as a Yankee fan, I see him all the time. Oswaldo Cabrera, he was a big fab spend early on, and for example, and he was not worth it. So luckily for me, I knew what kind of player he was, so I didn't go into the bidding, but try not to get caught up in the hype, I guess, that, like, you, I don't know, there's so many fab shows. You and Ryan do your fab show, but then there's also, like, the fab recaps. Waxman does his, Rob DiPietro does his, we do ours, yeah. As one, even though it's OC, like, there's the 15 things, like, plenty of people cover the main event. But one thing I really tried to keep in check on this team was, I don't know if you noticed, but I only had three bids over $100, and
yep,
the most was 134. And I think it's more of a product of how I drafted this team, because I didn't have a massive glaring hole that I thought one player could help fix. Like, I never went after. So I did bid for Christian Scott on this, but I didn't bid as much because I didn't need him as much. So I guess a lot of it comes down with how you're just, I don't know, like you highlighted when I was saying it though, too, but team needs is really what I try to focus on. Unless something happens early on where there's someone gets called up, I don't know, like maybe Paul Skeens, maybe I'll be more willing to go after a pitcher. Like, I think a pitcher is always on the table for someone to add, because you never know what's going to happen. Someone's going to get hurt or they're going to just fall apart. So I think starting pitching is the one spot where you can always be open to adding someone, but just don't go crazy with overbidding. I think I'm going to be done with 200 plus bids going into next year, because I bid on Noelvi Marte in a different main event, didn't work out. Christian Scott didn't work out. I mean, those are like the only two, but they took a lot of my fab on those teams out, and I didn't really get anything for either one. So just patience, try to not to get caught up in all the hype. I know, because like once the season kicks off, everyone's all excited and things like that, and it's easy to get carried away. So easier said than done, but I don't know, still trying to improve my process, like as I mentioned before, with the overbids. But yeah. I don't know, there's a lot to it.
There is a ton to it, and that's why it's fun, and I'm glad you let us kind of go through your brain, the process from start to finish, because there's multiple steps, and we probably could have gone a million times deeper if we really wanted to be like, okay, so your roster looked like this after the fab, but that would have been like seven shows later. And it's just a good idea. Good. I like how, especially as the season went on, you were making 3 to 5 moves some weeks in a 15 team league. Like, you were constantly looking at ways to say this guy's better than this guy, so on and so forth. And like you said, you drafted a good team, so you might have been able to hold on to more guys, or injuries happen. Like, there's certain situations that make you want to add or drop a guy. That's just part of the whole game. But it does help quite a bit to kind of see where you're going with that, the way, like, you didn't go crazy. You had $300 bids. We talked about a lot of, like, I'll say $25 to $45 bids. You're in that range. If not, you're like $8 or less in most of your bids. Like, that's kind of a trend, which helps quite a bit as well. All right, I got a couple comments I starred here from Adam throughout the show. I don't want to interrupt things, but well, let's go with this. Adam says, for example, say I need saves. Or he was talking about, he goes and looks at fab from his opponents. And he says, for example, say I need saves. I look at who else could move up and down in standings, who's likely to bid, and curtail my min-max bids accordingly. So that's where he goes and uses saves. I was just curious because he mentioned in the chat that he does look at fab dollars from opponents, and I was curious how he went about that.
I think I did that like once at the end of the season when I was really low, and I was just curious to see how the other teams were looking, because when it was like $30 or less, you know, yeah, that way is when I'll look.
But you want to save every possible dollar, basically.
And just to know, like, just curiosity to see how am I looking compared to my competitors, you know.
For sure. Adam also mentions, in my best OC in April, Luis Eel for 7, Profar for 7, Burleson for 4, dropped in May. In June, Chad Green for 44, July, Wallner for 3, Veerling 51, Birdsong 34. I blame Bubba for the birdie. He finished well for you, at least. But that's the beauty of OCs. You see those names available, Ben? Bet you a lot of those weren't available in your formats. Or if they were, they went for a lot of money. But yeah, those are
the go earlier in the 15s. I think we noticed, too, is that we'd go cover someone on the OC show. I'm like, oh, yeah, he was gone 2 weeks ago. Yeah,
pretty much. Yeah. Then Adam mentions, I had plenty of random bats arms in that $1 to $20 range that were just May mixed in there, too, of course. Yeah, well, that's kind of how it goes. And then he has one more question for you. This is fun because I play 12s primarily. I will play 15s, but I prefer 12s. You prefer 15s. He says, so in general, do you guys enjoy your 12 or 15 team leagues more? I've only played in a couple of 15s and found myself bored at times. Random fact, if by chance, Ben was in my first ever 15. He beat me. So you already said you're pretty much playing just 15s if you can. And I'll play 15s if I have to. Like, I'll play TGFBI. I'll play Barf. The listener leagues are 15s. I prefer 12s. I guess that answers that question. Do you have anything to, on top of that?
Well, I mean, I do have my Yahoo leagues that are 12s. I mean, they're a different kind of 12.
It's like a dynasty and stuff, though, right?
It's like a soft keeper. We keep four guys year to year at the most. And then I didn't do it this year, but I would do the public roto league. That's probably 12 teamers
or something. Yeah.
I mean, it's just so night and day because the player pool is so much, or the number of players that are rostered in the Yahoo 12 is so much smaller than even the OC. So it's completely different, but. And I like with 15s because you don't have to make those decisions of dropping a good guy that may be struggling like you would in a 12 because there's better replacement players. I don't know. I guess it depends on what you prefer. Do you want to try to find like the trash in the trash, or do you want to deal with the headache of multiple good options? Like
it's a headache. Like, trust me. It's multiple good options to add and who to drop when you're looking at them going, man, I just did my 15 lineup and there's no chance, in not a chance this guy's a drop. He's an automatic start. So those are, and oh my God, Tatis Jr. just hit a bomb. 6-1 for you Padres fans. But
he actually went pretty early in the current DC that the NFBC posted. I was surprised. He went 6th overall, so maybe everyone's back in on Tatis after this playoff series.
I thought he was going to be an MVP candidate this year. Then he got banged up again. Like, a healthy Tatis is a 40-40 dude. Like, he's a monster. So who knows? But all right, I just curtailed this because I looked up and saw just an absolute, just beautiful swing. And the Dodgers are down 6-1 in the second, if anybody didn't know.
That's awesome.
It's beautiful. Anything else you'd like to add before we wrap things up here as part two wraps up our two-part series on Ben's main event team?
No, I'm surprised we went into that much detail. Hopefully everyone enjoyed it. I mean, literally went through every move I made. I mean, minus lineup decisions, because that's another whole.
I'll say having a whole other five shows. Like, we went week by week on the
countless episodes to cover lineup decisions, I think. But yeah, it was fun to go over it. I mean, I'm glad I was able to do so with a solid mindset because of how upsetting it was at the end. But I mean, I'm still happy with how the team was. Like, I had it was a tough league that I was in. And I think it's good though that I had a team where I was winning literally like every week and then I lost it. So I've experienced that now and hopefully I can learn from it. But yeah, I don't mind going through the process and hopefully listeners can maybe take something from what I do or improve upon it and make it better for themselves. Or
yeah,
it's always just fun to hear what other people do, I think.
No, I learned. That's why I basically do Bench with Bubba. I learned from having people on to learn these things. And I've always said, going over what went right, what went wrong will make us better in the future. So it's always interesting to see the process behind things. And, you know, there's only a little bit more you can do to get right because you're still finished pretty high up on the mountaintop, which is pretty good. Right. So I got all things considered. That's a pretty promising thing. And everyone does it differently, which is fun. And that's why I kept trying to reiterate throughout the show. It's like, you don't have to do a million things if you don't want to. Some people just do a lot more and it helps, obviously. So stuff to play like that, but we will talk more strategy and whatnot throughout the off season. Get everybody ready for 2025 because people, like I said at the beginning of the show, they're drafting already, so we got that going as well. But until next time, make sure you check out Ben on Twitter at @BreakingBen_T. I'm at BD Intrick, and this was Bench with Bubba episode 692. Catch you all next time.